Lots and lots to discuss in our weekly segment now with Kevin Woodley from NHL.com and In Goal Magazine. Woodley, welcome back to the show, my man. How you doing?
I'm good. It's golf weather here in Vancouver as well, Jason, which may be apropos given the two markets and the teams that play in them for both of us.
Touche on that. Before we get to it, well, I guess let's start with Marty Brodeur retirement, how he kind of changed the game, the trapezoid, and also, you know, did he know he was a butterfly goalie growing up?
Not a lot of people did. I remember, and the quote kind of left no doubt. I remember being shocked when he gave it to me for the first time. It's probably about 3-4 years ago, just talking about styles and how he had kind of evolved. And, you know, he really was the poster boy for bucking the butterfly trend. He was the last of his kind in terms of the way he approached the game. And so when I asked him about growing up and his roots and how that came to be, and he said to me, growing up, my whole thing was butterfly, I was flabbergasted. I was shocked. He bucked that trend after the Devils drafted him with the goalie coach there, the longtime goalie coach, Jacques Charon, just placing a different focus on the way he moved, sort of short little C-cuts and T-pushes, and you know, a lot less of the sort of sliding and blocking and proper leg recovery mechanics that, you know, frankly became the norm, you know, kind of about mid-2000s. You know, they started with Waugh and the butterfly save, but, you know, the evolution of sort of butterfly movement and recovery mechanics kind of started in the 2000s to the point where, oh, by about 2003, you'd go to a camp of 12-year-olds and they'd all do it properly, but there were still guys in the NHL who didn't. And as more and more guys in the NHL learned how to, Marty just kind of always resisted that. And so it was really interesting to me that he had gone completely the other way. He had bucked the trend not only by, it wasn't so much staying true to form, but actually evolving away from the form that all others were embracing. And, you know, clearly it worked for him.
Oh, definitely. It worked for him. Became one of the greatest goalies of all time. And it is rare that a goalie comes in and replaces a legend and, you know, doesn't get ridden out of town. But Corey Schneider has come in New Jersey, and, you know, obviously they're not winning cups because there's no Scott Stevens in front of Corey Schneider, which is the one thing that no one ever talked about in New Jersey. But Scott Stevens was the face of that team. I don't care what anyone says. And you look at Corey Schneider, though, he's playing on the worst offensive team in the league and keeping him in games because they have the third best goals against.
Yeah, and, you know, it wasn't easy for him here in Vancouver playing behind and then ahead of and amid a lot of controversy with Roberto Luongo, but I think it prepared him perfectly for life in New Jersey. Not an easy thing to do, to go in there and be the guy that replaces, that follows up on a legend, and ultimately, you know, supplanted him while Marty was still there, just based on his play. Also not an easy thing to do because the Devils, while Marty was still there, played a different style, Jason, than a lot of teams, and, you know, it was harder to see on the surface. You didn't kind of realize it until you started to talk to the goalies themselves. And you know, every time a goalie would go in there, I remember Johan Hedberg telling me it was a real adjustment for him early. It wasn't so much X's and O's as it was preferences involving shot blocking. And Marty was a pure read and react guy. We just talked about how he bucked the butterfly trend. He wasn't about square footage and taking up space and positioning. He was about being able to see that puck and react to it and control rebounds and really kind of actively use his hands and his legs to kick things out as opposed to just kind of letting it hit him. And that required seeing the release. And so other goalies would get there, and as Hedberg told me, shots that every other team he'd played for were automatic blocks. Like, that was what you did, is you got in the way of it as a defenseman or a forward. Now all of a sudden they were moving out of the way to let him have a look. And that takes some getting used to. There's certainly less of it over the last couple of years and since Schneider got there. But there were still players and defensemen and on that team when Schneider arrived that was the mantra, that you got out of the way and you let Marty see the shot, and that was the key to his game. And so that made the adjustment on the ice even tougher, in addition to having to go through the off-ice stuff and all the questions and all the focus of, you know, ultimately being the guy that, you know, is asked to supplant a goaltender who now has a statue in front of the building in his honor.
Kevin Woodley from In Goal Magazine and NHL.com joins us. Kevin, I've been watching Anders Nilsson, and I know the scouting report on him early in the year was the one concern was his glove hand. We didn't see that early on, but His last six starts have been beyond awful. .840 save percentage, a goals against average of like 4.3. And against the New York Islanders, like his glove hand and, you know, cheating on the post on a short side goal on Tavares, like he looked completely out of sorts. When you break it down, what's wrong in his game?
I mean, we talked about this before and how he doesn't need to be aggressive at his size, but you still have to find that balance between assertive and, hey, listen, Jacob Markstrom here in Vancouver is, you know, posting a pretty good number in terms of save percentage. He's going to get another start tonight, and his glove hand is in the focus. I mean, when you fill up that much net, you can do a lot with positioning alone. And Anders, to me, again, you know, said the same thing a couple weeks ago, and I haven't seen a change. I've seen it get worse. And, you know, you kind of mentioned to me the idea that he could go down on a conditioning stint even. And
but he could even go down with it. He doesn't even need that. He can clear waivers any time.
And normally I'd be hesitant because he's played enough that you would think he'd be able to figure it out here. He's been in the NHL long enough. But I agree. He just looks like a guy who's lost his trust in his reads, lost his confidence. That assertiveness is missing. And when you combine, you know, if that becomes the book, as it is on Markstrom, if you're not able to take a little ice and take that away using your phrase and using your frame and using your size, you're going to get exploited. And he just doesn't look confident right now in any of his reads. And I would suggest that this isn't a very easy team to be confident behind right now when they've gone back to just the lack of structure that has kind of plagued them for however many years. I thought this was a team that was making strides in that regard in terms of the mantra and the message, talking to, you know, some of the coaching staff there about lessons and, you know, sort of habits that they were trying to ingrain from the start of the season. And we've seen some slippage behind that. And so you need your goalie to bail you out to help you kind of trust that it's going to work, but it works both ways. You need the team to kind of stick to the structure as well. And as a goaltender, as soon as that doesn't happen, you know, the read you're supposed to make is tougher and tougher to trust. And it's been a while now for him that he doesn't look like he's completely trusting those reads, and he's getting caught deeper and he's getting caught more in between on plays than we were seeing early in the season. And that's hard for me to disagree that maybe a chance to go and play without pressure and play some games might not be a bad thing. And if it gives you a chance to look at Laurent Brossoit at the same time up in Edmonton, and, you know, with some decisions coming in terms of what you do moving forward, that might not be the end of the world for the Oilers.
Yeah, I don't. The one thing I won't buy is that it's the team behind him, because in the exact same time span, Cam Talbot had a 2.0 goals against and a .937 save percentage, was playing unbelievable. And so I think a lot of it is really just, you know, between the ears for Nilsson. And the goals he allowed against the Islanders, you know, Johnny Boychuk coming down the wing on short side slap shot. Like, as a goalie, that's a cardinal sin of goals you shouldn't allow. Now, speaking of goalies, and lots of controversy is the wrong word, but lots of debate over what happens in between the pipes in Anaheim. Anderson's back, and now suddenly he's playing ahead of Gibson again. What do you see them doing long? Like, Gibson seems like the obvious long-term answer, and I don't think either one will get traded this year because there's no need to, but in the summertime when next season Gibson requires waivers, I think that that's a point where they'll probably want to get something for one of them. Who do you think is the better goalie?
Ooh, I know who they think is the better goalie. I know who they think has the higher upside, and that's John Gibson, and that's why he'll probably be the one that stays. Although, you know, don't discount, and I've seen Elliot Friedman talk about it, heard him talk about it, and seen him mentioned a few times in his 30 Thoughts columns. Don't discount the role that the agency switch may be playing here with Anderson, one of two players there. It's kind of caught in the middle of this Rich Winter, Claude Lemieux mess. And it really has played a role in which way they may go with this. It's gotten messy there, and they're a team that might just not want to deal with that mess. So Anderson is the guy that they've looked to move, frankly, already, and is available. The problem is, for a buying team, and I would think if you're the Calgary Flames, you've got to have an interest there. Right now the price is high because the Ducks sort of don't need to make that move just yet. And they're, like you said, as much as it looked like it was Gibson's net, Anderson's come back and played well and started to take starts away from him again. And there's just a level of uncertainty, particularly with Gibson's ability to stay healthy. And he's still a young kid, and he plays a game that still, to me, is very reliant on rhythm and timing. There's extra movement there. And that's the kind, especially as a young goalie, takes you a while to kind of dial that in, and there's going to be ups and downs with him. I've said it for the past couple of years, and it's kind of proven true, and I don't think we're past that with him. So if you're the Ducks, you've got really no pressure to move Anderson now, but I think over the course of the summer, for teams that are considering what do we do with our future, Frederik Andersen is going to be an option, and I would imagine as we hit the summer months, the price drops, because right now the price is very high, like I said, in part because you know he is a pretty valuable commodity, and mostly because the Ducks just don't feel like they need to do anything just right now. I think they will need to do something as we hit the summer.
Kevin Woodley joins us in Goal Magazine. Kevin, I want to talk about the St. Louis Blues, and Elliott right now is one of the hottest goalies in the NHL.
Yeah, so how long before the Blues do something that undermines them? Every time this guy gets on a roll, and I know there are a lot of people that don't believe in him, but I watch him play and I watch his skill set, and you know, I know some of the mental preparation things that have plagued him in the past, you know, that he's tried to work on getting past in terms of, you know, maybe being a little too reliant on everything going the perfect way in his warm-up routine, from juggling to stretching to dynamic warm-up and bouncing balls off walls. If, you know, if those things didn't go well for him, you know, he tended to carry that into a game. But those are things he's worked on. Technically, I really like his game. I've really liked his game kind of since he got to St. Louis, and an evolution that started in Ottawa. Because when he played in college, he played a style that was looked nothing like the guy he is now. Straight through Ottawa, right into Colorado, and now into St. Louis. It's been a complete overhaul of his game. And by the time he got to St. Louis, I liked how it looked. There were a lot of good parts there. But every time he had a little bit of a wobble or there was an option to go with someone else, they did. Whether it was bringing in Marty Brodeur last year or giving Jake Allen the amount of starts they did before he got hurt this year, there just does not seem to be an internal belief in Brian Elliott. And you just wait for the next opportunity for them to kind of show that. And then if the guy they choose and plays him doesn't pan out, once again, they've undermined the mental side of the game for Brian Elliott. And hey, it's on him to deal with that. But it just boggles my mind sometimes that they haven't given him a chance when it matters to run with it. They just never have. They've always looked for the next option, and they've looked for it quickly. And so when Brian Elliott is among the NHL save leaders at this point in the season, you think maybe it's going to be his time. I wouldn't be surprised as soon as Jake Allen is healthy again if he gets an opportunity to reclaim that, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, how that goes. Because they keep Elliott around, they keep bringing him back, but they keep, at the same time, just undermining his confidence at every opportunity. And it's a really weird, interesting situation to keep an eye on. And it's one that I think leaves them without a clear-cut, defined option going into the playoffs just about every year. And you can say what you want about mental incompetence and all those things, but I think not just the goalies, but the team. There's times where a team just wants to know who their guy is and get behind that guy and not have all that second-guessing that the Blues seem to invite upon themselves every year.
Kevin, speaking of Elliott, Crawford and a few others, I know Eddie Lack has some black pads coming. Miller's wearing the all-black vintage on Saturday. We're starting to see goalies bucking the trend of going from the all-white to the black. Why?
It's an interesting question. It's one I'm trying to get into this week with a few interviews around the league, like Crawford and Miller. I mean, Miller's going to the black for the vintage game. They're going to wear the old horrific Halloween uniforms with this, you know, sort of skate and the spaghetti, whatever plate that is that the Vancouver Canucks used to wear. And so he played along. He's got all black pads with yellow, orange, and red stripes and a V shape on the front. He's got matching gloves. It looks great. It's got a matching mask. Looks fantastic. It's a one-off for him because he believes he looks bigger in white equipment. And there still are guys, most guys, even goalie coaches at the professional level that insist upon this for their goaltenders. They believe that white looks bigger, that white makes it harder for shooters to differentiate in a split second where the equipment ends and the net starts, the open net starts. And so for that reason, I still think you're always going to see a majority of guys wearing a majority of white equipment. As a matter of fact, the first time the equipment rules were discussed in the 04-05 lockout, the NHL goalies all kind of agreed, hey, if you want us to look smaller, make us wear dark equipment. But they never fed that idea to the league because they kind of figured, wow, we'll give them that and they'll just want more. So they never actually kind of brought that up on an official level, like ban white equipment. It looks, the dark stuff looks smaller. And that belief has kind of made its way through hockey. Yet here we are this year, Corey Crawford among the leaders in save percentage, and he switched. He had home and away to start the year. He's now going all black all the time. Doesn't look much smaller to me. Brian Elliott goes with the all blue Curtis Joseph tribute retro set, and he's been wearing it throughout that run that we've just talked about that's moved him into one of the NHL save percentage leaders at this point in the season. It's all been done in that blue gear. The funny thing is, the first night he was in that gear, I talked to a couple of goalies the next day, NHL guys, and what did they say? He looks small to me. But clearly the pads are the same size, and clearly it's not affecting his play. So it's going to be interesting to see. Eddie Lack's agonized over this decision. We had this discussion last year about whether he should switch. He's a guy that loves style. He wanted to try black pads, but that belief that it would make him look smaller kept him away from it. So we're starting to see more and more guys realize that, hey, it's measured the same. But there's still that mindset that, hey, black is slimming, right, in the fashion world, and shooters can pick out where the gear ends and the net begins that split second faster, and that's an advantage. And it'll be interesting to see whether more and more guys buck that trend or whether it just remains the handful that have this year. Because it's, hey, every half inch, every half second, every quarter of a second matters in this league. And if guys really believe that white will make them look bigger, whether it's reality or not, or give them that extra half a second for a shooter to figure out where he's got open net, they're going to stick with it. But it really is kind of an interesting trend to keep an eye on.
Very interesting. And if I'll tell you right now, if a goalie wearing black pads has success in the playoffs, suddenly there'll be a lot of goalies wearing black pads.
Well, Crawford wore his, I mean, it didn't start that way in the Nashville series, but he went to black throughout the rest of the run. So, you know, maybe that's why you're seeing more and more guys buck that trend. And, you know, even Fleury, right? He got rid of the bright yellow pads because an optometrist told him that yellow was the color most easy, that the human eye distinguishes and picks out faster than any other color.
Really?
So, and so that's why he went away from the all yellow, because, again, shooters were able to see where the gear was. And that's not where you want to aim if you're a shooter, right? So he went away from the all-yellow. Now we've seen him bring it back this year with the retro pad. So maybe some of the, you know, maybe it becomes superstition. As Miller told me, hey, look good, feel good, play good. Whether it's reality or not, for some guys, certain colors make them feel better, and that's enough, right? In a game that's measured between the ears as much as it is between the pipes at times, that's enough.
Kev, always good to catch up with you, my man. We'll do it again next Monday. Next Tuesday, because we're off. It's family day in Alberta next Monday.
Well, we had our family day here yesterday.
Yes. Well, ours is next Monday.
Get this all straightened out and have us all in the same family
You'd
day
think
one
so,
of the year?
Yeah. Well, maybe we should be a Western Canada family. We should talk about that.
There we go.
All right. Have a good one, my man.
Take care.